Deer Plugged In. You in on this? Toyota's versatile SUVs roll up their sleeves and take on tough jobs, dress up for a night out, or haul your family and friends with their spacious interiors. And they're available with some real sweet tech. Want a hybrid SUV? Oh yeah, they got those too. All with a slew of standard features so you won't break the bank. Get the juice at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Before we get started on today's show, I want to tell you guys about some of the cool stuff that George Carl has brewing over at Sonics Forever. They've got a new episode dropping this Wednesday. It features Bob Whitsett, a legendary sports executive and the GM of the Sonics when George was in Seattle, Kobe Carl, George's son, and the head coach of the South Bay Lakers, and of course, George himself. It was recorded live at Dick Drive-In in Seattle a couple weeks ago, and it's a lot of fun. Great episode and a good discussion about the return of the Sonics, which I believe is happening very soon. And you can check out that episode and everything else over on sonicsforever.com. What is up, everybody, and welcome to the Keeping It 1000 podcast with myself, Adam Matas, my co-host, George Carl. We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. Download it right now. Use promo code DNVR when you do. We got a great show today, guys. We're going to talk about the Hall of Fame. We're going to preview this first-round matchup between the Nuggets and Blazers and talk about a couple other things that are going on with the Denver Nuggets. And to join me to do all of that is George Carl. Coach, how are you doing today?
Rainy day in Seattle. It feels like I'm in Seattle.
Always in a Seattle state of mind. Brought the Sonics hat. Almost got him to wear the Nuggets hat tonight, but we're getting close. By the way, happy belated birthday.
Thank you. I'm 70 years old. Yes, sir.
70 years young. What'd you do for your birthday?
My son came into town with his family, so that was one night. Played golf 2 days in a row at Colorado Golf Club and the Ridge. With a bunch of good players and competitive with spirit. And then I went out with my guys on the podcast, and they took me to a sushi dinner. I don't do sushi very much.
Really?
I like sushi now. Someone knows how to put it in front of me, I'll eat it. So anybody that wants to take me to sushi, give me a call.
Sounds like you heard it here. Give him the invite. We got this was an interesting week. Some tanking, some maneuvering, some teams fighting for their lives while other teams are fighting to lose as best they can. First of all, there's been a lot of talk about the play-in and the competitiveness, but I don't know how much you watched of that last day. I love the play-in. I love the competitive nature it created, but that last day was kind of crazy, kind of ridiculous. What were your thoughts watching how the final day unfolded with so many teams trying to pick their matchup?
I felt like I was in Europe. I felt like I was playing in the World Games, where all the teams are trying to figure out when to win and when to lose. And you know, I just remember my misery of coaching the USA team when we played Yugoslavia right. In the first round, and they would be the team that won a championship. And I'm not sure they tried to be in that place, but the maneuvering and. I don't know. It doesn't turn me on, I guess is the best way to phrase it. I like it to be, I like the game, basketball, to be real, play the right way, play hard every night, play. Don't mess with your karma.
Yeah.
Your basketball karma, I call it a little bit. I call it the basketball gods. I've always had this fantasy that every night up in heaven there are 10 great basketball, ex-basketball coaches playing poker, and they're dealing out who's going to get good luck and who's going to get bad luck.
I got to say, I don't believe in that. I wish I did. It's such a romantic feeling, but there's too many times where I felt like, okay, this team's going to be punished for this terrible thing they did, and then they get rewarded or vice versa. And I have a feeling that it might be the same case here. I mean, you look at it, The Clippers, let's not kid ourselves. They threw the last two games of the season. This last one against the Thunder, who are also trying to throw the game, and it was crazy. But, you know, they got the matchups that they wanted. They have the road to the Western Conference Finals that I think is most favorable for them. Denver did similar things last year, and maybe this is the new world we live in. I'm with you. It feels weird. I don't know if you can fix it. There's so many it seems like the NBA is so smart these days. Too smart for their own good, where you create rules, and then you find the way to take advantage of those rules to get an edge. And I just don't know if you can fix it.
Probably not. You know, my suggestions, I've always thought, I would rather have, instead of us having a magnifying glass on 14 to 20, can we put a magnifying glass maybe on 10 to 16?
Right.
And that way, I mean, I'm a big believer that the teams that win the conferences should get a bye in the first round. And I think we should shorten the season just because I think fatigue, obviously everybody's more worried ever about injury and fatigue than ever before. And then my favorite thing is to play a single elimination basketball tournament like the NCAA in February.
I think it's coming.
I think that those are simple things. I know it takes 82 games now to maybe a 62-game schedule or
right.
Whatever. But the kind of put a focus on these six or eight teams that, other than the Lakers, are right. Probably going to be eliminated pretty quickly.
Well, I think it's coming, and I'm with you. We were talking a couple days back on this show that the hockey guys do it right. They have so many little trophies for little accomplishments. They got the Stanley Cup. That's always the best. And then they got the President's Trophy, and they've got all these other different things. And it's like, hey, there's more than one success. There's one big success, but there's more other successes. And to that point, you guys, by the way, Truth in Media now. It's Truth in Basketball, Truth in Media. You guys have a lot of cool stuff going on. I talk to Brett almost every other day, it seems. And I know that you guys have a new thing along these lines, Forgotten Seasons.
I think it's going to be great. I mean, I like it because it celebrates great teams that didn't win championships.
Absolutely.
And there's so many of them. And because there have been many times in my situation that I think the guy that lost as a coach did a better job than the guy that won.
Right, right.
But the guy that lost loses his job.
Right.
And I think when you have other wins for coaches, it will hopefully give more ability for coaches to sustain their jobs and sustain maybe a longer lifespan in cities and stuff like that.
So what is the plan, just real quickly, for the podcast? Interviewing and going back and saying, hey, let's take a look at this. It wasn't a championship season, but it was a great season, and let's relive it?
Well, they picked my last year in Denver.
Yeah.
The guy called us and called me and wanted to go over, you know, that year. And he did a great job of knowing the numbers, knowing the stats, knowing the information. And, you know, I walked away from it feeling very, very uplifted because, you know, he made me feel that we were a great team, even though we didn't win a championship. And there's teams like that. Like, I know Dell Harris has a lot of teams that would be really interesting when he coached. He took a bad Houston Rocket team to the NBA Finals one year. He and I had a battle. He beat us when we played in Tacoma and Seattle, and the first round matchup between us and the Lakers and Nick Van Exel and Gary Payton. It was a great playoff series. And you could do it for all sports.
Yeah.
You could do this in football. You could do this in baseball. And I think you can do it all. And you also probably take it into college. You know, where a college basketball team, you know, had just an unbelievable year but didn't win the NBA NCAA championship. Can be celebrated, and I think that's a good thing. And the guy does, a real young guy out of New York, I think he's going to do a great job, and we're glad to be partnering with him.
Well, talking about history and legacy and these things, the Hall of Fame, of course, was this weekend. I don't usually watch the Hall of Fame. I mean, I watch the highlights. I'll catch the speeches or this or that, but I watched this one in part because some of my favorite players, you know, Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, I think this was, as far as players go, that's an incredible class of players.
No question.
What did you catch any of it? Did you see any of the things that came out of it? And what do you make of this Hall of Fame class?
It's a great Hall of Fame class. I mean, from a standpoint of players, You can't get three better basketball players. I mean, most people think Duncan's the greatest power forward of all time. Kevin Garnett is maybe one of the greatest defensive players of all time.
Right.
And, you know, and Kobe is going to be one of the all-time great players of all time. So how can you add to that? And the Hall of Fame is, I think it's the pinnacle of a career that's ended or a career that, you know, is retired. And then, you know, the greatest feeling would be able to go there and have 10 minutes to speak in front of your peers. Say your thank yous and accolades. And I thought it was well done. And I think the Hall of Fame is doing I think every year they get a little more focused on doing the right things.
Right. You're one of the winningest coaches of all time in NBA history. What would it mean for you to get into the Hall?
That's a hard one for me. I run from it more often than I like to talk about it. If that happens, it'd be a celebration. It'd be an honor. It'd be humbling. My family and I have talked about it a little bit, and I think I probably want it more for them than for me. I would get nervous about it, but, you know, I look back at my time and the people that touched me in Penn Hills, Pennsylvania. I look back and being mentored by Coach Smith and Coach Guthridge in North Carolina. I mean, it would be nice to thank the people that held my hand and kicked me in the ass and mentored me. You know, I mean, I think I did some things the right way, but I also made a lot of mistakes. And fortunately, I had the ability to be, my mistakes could be corrected before I ruined myself. And I think we all have those people in our lives in a lot of ways. And it'd be humbling, but it'd be an honor to go there and sit there and be nervous as hell and scared and have a clock ticking down. You got 10 minutes to say your lifetime history in 10 minutes.
Well, six most wins in NBA history, and I think, you know, one of the premier coaches, not just for the Nuggets, but several organizations. So, you know, hopefully in the coming years, it's a thing that becomes a reality. I want to ask you now, if we move on here, Jokic just wrapped up what I am pretty certain will be his first MVP season. The first one in Denver Nuggets history. I know it hasn't officially come out. They do this thing now where we have a award show and we're not going to have the official unveiling for another 2.5 months. And I think it's ridiculous. It used to be that you would let it was almost right away. I do think we're going to know. More writers like to share their ballots and let everybody know. And already a bunch of them have come out. Looks like Jokic is going to win in a landslide. What can you put this in context of what you feel like his season means and just how much he impacted winning from what you watched relative to what you saw from everybody else this year?
I know we don't want to call him a young player, but he's a young player growing up, blowing up right in front of us. For the people out there, there's never been a second round draft pick
right
in the history of the NBA ever win the MVP. There has been another one. Willis Reed won it, but he was probably drafted 11th.
I think it was 8th, but yeah.
You know, and so, you know, here's a guy who was drafted in the 40s that has moved to the top of the mountain. And there, I mean, I hope next year there's more competition, but to be honest with you, he is, there's a big gap between him and Chris Paul or him and LeBron or him and where Steph Curry all of a sudden has been thrown into the mesh.
Really? And a big gap between even Steph Curry and LeBron?
This year? Yeah. You know, from his value? No one did their responsibilities better than Nikola or Jokic this year. No one. He was responsible in every way possible. He got better defensively. He's an incredible rebounder. He loves the game. He plays with passion. He plays to make other people better. He makes the game simple. There's so many little things that as a coach I say throughout a career of coaching, that's who he is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure he's not totally low maintenance, but he seems like he's a low maintenance player.
Right.
I don't know if we talked about it, but I've talked about some people about that he's so low maintenance, he reminds me a little bit of Tim Duncan.
Right, right.
And Tim Duncan is Mr. Fundamental. He was boring. People didn't like to watch San Antonio because they were boring. And I'm going, these guys are crazy. Anybody that makes the game look that easy should be watched, because that's why you play the game.
What about a historical context? And I bring this up because I don't know if you saw prominent sports talking head Nick Wright over at Fox Sports 1 said Jokic would be the worst or second worst MVP the game has had in 50 years or something like that. And look, he's 26. His career is at the best years are probably ahead of him. But just historically speaking, how good was he? Is he a bad MVP if there is such a thing?
He's bad. He's a bad MVP, probably because he's not spectacular. He's not a highlight film. He's not a guy that's going to dunk it in a crowd. You know, he's gonna trick you more than dunk it and be athleticism. I really think I don't know where he is efficiency in the NBA, but I would think this man over the last 3 years or last four seasons, he might be the most efficient basketball player I've seen play basketball.
Wow. Most efficient, not just shooting, all aspects of it.
Well, his passing is an amazing part of it. I mean, no big man has ever passed the ball as well as this guy passes the ball.
Right.
I mean, they bring in Walton, they bring in Divac, and they bring in Chris Webber and
Sabonis.
No. This is a different cat. This is a different cat.
I'm glad you said that, because I hear it all. I hear it less so. I feel like that is becoming more and more popular, but I still hear people saying one of the best passing bigs or one of this or that. And I remember I talked to Arturnis Karnasovas years back, who played with Arvydas Sabonis and then, of course, was part of the team that brought Jokic here. And he compared him, and he said there really wasn't a comparison. You know, Sabonis, a great passer, a lot of stationary passing, a lot of elbow passing. So what Jokic does isn't just passing. It's running the team on the move from stationary, not just making nice passes, but creating nice passes. And so I don't know that he'd ever go on record with that one or this or that, but I know that when you talk to people who have played with some of these different greats, and they'll say, no, we got to appreciate him as his own tier. The way we appreciate Steph Curry as not one of the great shooters, but as a uniquely great shot maker, three-point shot maker.
I just really think people haven't studied Jokic. When Nick Wright says that, he doesn't see him play enough games.
Right.
Nick Wright. I actually like Nick Wright until that comment. He went down a big step on my category of liking somebody. To make that statement, to diminish somebody like that, when it's not even a contest. I mean, if you know anything about basketball, it's not a contest.
What do you make of when you hear comments like that? Because I agree with you. Nick Wright he puts in a lot of time for basketball. He likes it. Sometimes I hear comments like this, and I almost question them, like, are you, you know, think about how much conversation that generated, and all of a sudden he's doing the circuit, he's making every show appearance. I mean, I almost question it sometimes, like, hey, I know you have more thought than this. How are you, because it wasn't just, I don't think Jokic is this, it was diminishing him, saying, oh, you'll regret this in a year.
Why? I mean, the guy is spectacular to watch. No, I agree with you. I mean, I think we all know that media has a way of going to the spectacular and the fantastical comment because it sells, because it makes noise, because it can take a day of news and make it a 3 or 4 days of news. And I thought that was really off base. And I thought it was, one, fortunately, I think it was poorly received.
Right.
And two, I kind of liked the basketball reaction was you're crazy.
Yeah. Reminder, everybody, you can send in your questions at the back. At the end of the show, we're going to look at the best ones. Super producer Kale is earmarking all the best questions. So if you have a question for Coach, go ahead and send those in now. We'll probably get to a lot of the things you guys want to talk about, but you guys always have great, unique questions. Staying on Jokic for a second now. What do you expect of him against the Blazers? And I'm not even talking about the matchup. We'll talk about the matchup and maybe specifics. He needs to attack from here. He needs to do this or that. But just looking, stepping back 10,000-foot view, he's an MVP. He's had some great playoff series. What do you expect from quality of play and just the level he has to reach in the series and will reach in the series, in your opinion?
Well, you know, I think we got to see a sustaining of what he did last year of being the man, not taking days off, not taking games off. And don't get me wrong, that doesn't mean he can't have a bad game. He can't have a bad game. That's why it's a 7-game series. And I think the whole thing when I was preparing in this mindset is, does Jokic got to win 3 games for him, or is he got to be the man in 3 games, or do we have to have him 4 games? 4 games hard. If you got to be the man and play great to lift your team to 4 wins, he's going to need some help, in my opinion. And I think Portland's in the same bag. But they do have 2 guys that have won playoff games, as where you could argue right now the Denver Nuggets really have 1 guy that has really been a winning performer on that stage. But McCollum can win games. So I think the big question for me is, how good is Denver's defense? I know Denver's defense has improved. Their backcourt is kind of in... No one knows. I don't even know if Mike Malone knows who he's going to play. But I think that's going to be something that has to settle very quickly, I think. I don't think you can mishmash it against those guards. They got really good scoring guards. And no one wants them to talk about Powell. You know, Powell can put a number on the board. And they got 2 scorers off the bench.
Cantor and Melo.
I like Melo and the young point guard. I forget the
Simons?
Kid. Simons, little bit. He's had some interesting games in the last 20 games of the season. Could he come in and be a wild card in a bench playing role, or can Melo come in and be a wild card? I'm a believer that the bench in this coming series is going to have some value to it. It's going to make it easier to be successful if someone on the bench kind of has a prominent role that right now we're not sure is going to have that role.
I characterize the Blazers bench as, you just said, wild card. They have a lot of wild card scores. I mean, Melo can get hot. He'll score 14 and a quarter, 15 and a quarter. Simon's the same way. He can get hot. Cantor down the post can be a load. Denver, I would categorize their bench more as a defensive unit. They can really lock down defensively, but scoring sometimes can come hard from them. Maybe Monte changes that. You're laughing because it sounds like you'd maybe disagree with this. But Denver's bench, their second unit for the last month and a half has been a defensive, but they haven't been able to score.
Well, who's on the bench? I mean, is Barton going to be on the bench? Is
I don't know if Barton's ready.
Is Dozier coming back? Is
right.
I think they've had, you know, one of the things that has saved this season is Mike Malone's done a great job of managing the depth of the team. And having the courage to play guys that I don't think a lot of coaches would have had the courage to play.
Like who, for example? I'm curious there.
Well, I mean, I think Fosu. When you saw Fosu early in the season, did you expect him to be a 35-minute player for him?
He looked rough. There was a point where he really bottomed out.
And I mean, Dozier. I thought he played really well. But he's been a little inconsistent in his last return. And now he's hurt again. So I can see why you're arguing the defense, but I think Rivers, if Barton comes back, I would put Rivers in the starting lineup and keep Barton as a player. My mindset is Martin is a hell of a scorer off the bench.
Yeah.
And I think in this scenario, I think it'd be a nice counter to Melo and some of the power scorers that come off the Portland bench.
How do you handle Will Barton? Because he's been out so long. We've seen him come back from injury in a playoffs. 2 years ago, they brought him back right before the playoffs, and he really struggled. How do you handle him not knowing what he gives you, how healthy he can be? And not just him. You've also got Monte Morris, who's probably a little – he's maybe more established now. You feel comfortable. But maybe even a P.J. Dozier. Again, you don't know what he can give you. He's been out so long. How do you handle that?
That's a hard thing. I mean, it depends. I mean, you have to remember this team. Murray's been out for 18 games. I don't know how long.
I think it is 18, yeah.
14 and, you know, and they've had the best record in the NBA with Murray out. That's really, really powerful to me. So do you want to continue playing a lot of musical chairs with who plays, when they play, where they play, who they play with, all that stuff? I don't think most of the time going into the playoff that made me very comfortable. Mm. I would like more continuity, more consistency, more players knowing when and where they're going to play. But that might not be the luxury they have. They might just have to paint the picture as the game goes on, as I call it. you know, good teams. It's kind of like when you, I always looked at painting the picture a little bit as a coach. Good teams have a lot of the border and the corners already filled in. So they only have to fill in the big part of, you know, how to win the game. But both Portland and Denver, they're kind of new teams searching for their identity. I think it's going to be a good series. I think Denver, because of Jokic, I trust Jokic. And if Denver's defense can be just decent to good, just a little bit above good, I think, and controlling their guards and knocking down the three ball. The three ball scares me. I'm on record. I think right now, if Portland has a big strength, is they make the three ball more consistently on a big time level than the Denver Nuggets.
What is the challenge of facing a team for the second time in 3 years? Yeah, it's happened sometimes where you get a team back-to-back years, or you get them. I mean, to me, there's a Nurkic factor. You know, there's these guys have kind of known each other. They've seen each other enough. What's that like?
There's a lot of good sub-stories in this series. Yeah. I mean, offensive guards against defensive guards, Jokic versus Lillard. Who's going to be the secondary performer? I think in a lot of ways, both teams made a trade at the end of the season. And Powell and Gordon could be the second fiddle. In this series.
Little battleground.
I mean, I know Michael Porter Jr., everybody wants him to jump forward. I still don't, I'm kind of in that mode. Don't rush him.
Okay.
Because he's had a hell of a season.
We'll get to him.
And in a quiet way, I think the guys that were picked up, what, a month ago? A little bit longer than that. Those are the guys that are going to have to make some positive contribution to both teams.
Yeah. But what about the bad blood, though? Just, I mean, I feel like in a playoff series, by game three, both fan bases hate each other. The players seem to be a little bit extra chippy. Just anytime you go up in that at that level against a team over multiple games, there's bad blood. But I do feel like with Portland, you know, Denver has to remember 2 years ago. They knocked them out. They almost were in back-to-back Western Conference Finals. They come up one game short. Does that play into it at all, this idea of, like, is there extra bad blood at this stage, or is that – at this point, you can't get any higher.
You know, it's hard for me to talk about a bad blood physical series in 2020 when in 1990s there was a lot of bad blood. In the early 2000s, there was a lot of ugly bad blood. I'm not sure our game is refereed or organized or structured to create that angry playoff mode. It could happen, but I don't know who. Millsap kind of was the stimulation of intimidation last year.
Right.
Will that happen in this series, or will it happen in the next series? But there's a process of learning how to play playoff basketball, that this is going to be very good. But in many ways, this is a new team. New importance.
Right, yeah. On both sides.
I mean, you don't have Gary Harris. You don't have Barton. You don't have Murray, you're talking about 60-70% of their offense is now going to have to be filled in by Gordon or Porter Jr. or Fosu or Austin Rivers. I think Austin Rivers, to me, is an important part of the scenario right now.
In what way? Offensively, defensively, both? I mean, but primarily, where is he an X-factor?
I just think you got to have one good defensive guard on the court all the time. And Rivers can start you there. Whoever factors in the secondary guy. Some people, of course, has mentioned Gordon covering Damon a little bit. I'd kind of like that a little bit. But I think it's going to be a team thing of how to cover the pick and rolls. Mm. You know, can they figure out when Jokic is in the pick and roll to do it? Can JaVale McGee give them a paint presence to protecting the basket a little bit? There's going to be some interesting stuff that's going to open up in the first couple games.
Let's take a quick break here, guys. On the other side, we're going to get to questions. We're going to continue to break down the series, talk about Michael Porter, talk about the matchups, even Faku. How do you defend Damian Lillard? Which guard do you put? We're going to get to all that. But first, Only one commercial, always on the Keeping It 1000 podcast. That's because the presenting sponsor, DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, and it's playoff times in the NBA, big stakes, bigger promotions. It's time to hammer the over and score some cash. DraftKings Sportsbook is giving you a chance to lower the over-under on a featured playoff game. It's no fun to bet on unders, by the way. This is why DraftKings is doing this. If you bet, they're going to set the line they think is fair and allow you to go under on it. So all players who place a bet on the featured basketball game will have a hand in lowering the over-under on the game. That's right. For every 1,500 players who bet the over on the select game, the over-under will drop by 1 point. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. So download the top-rated sportsbook app right now. Use promo code DNVR when you sign up to hammer the over. Remember, for every 1,500 people who place that bet on the featured game, the line will decrease by 1 point. They did this, by the way. Am I wrong, Kale? Did they did this for like the first Broncos game of the year? And the line, I think, was zero. I can't remember if it was Broncos or another one. It was the Chiefs. Chiefs game. That's right. The over-under was 0 points. So this is going to get low. You're going to want to sign up and get that promotion because it'll end up being like if a team scores 1 point, you will hit your bet and win some money. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. Restrictions apply. Max $25 wager, one per customer. Offer ends 5/23/21. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And of course, if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Back here on the Keeping It 1000 podcast, we are previewing Blazers Nuggets 2, the rematch. Series that begins on Saturday, by the way. You're going to want to, if you're not going to make it to the game, first of all, try to get tickets to the game. 43.5% capacity. I'm excited for that. If you can make it to the game, do that. Your backup option, though, the DNVR bar. Saturday night, I'm telling you, outside of Ball Arena, there's going to be no better place to watch this game. No capacity limits for the first time ever, so I'm very excited to see what this place looks like for a playoff game when the bar is absolutely full and popping. How do you think that 43.5%? So all season long, the Nuggets have been at 0% or 20-ish percent. Now you're going to double it. 43, almost half. How do you think? Do you think that will make any impact on the playoffs or how players perform?
I hope so. Because I really believe the first two games are the hardest games to win, and if Denver can get up 2-0, I think they'll win the series with some confidence. But Portland's going to come in here with the idea of stealing one and then making and trying not giving that back by going to Portland. I haven't heard what the capacity in Portland is going to be, but I hope it's not going to be the same because I'm kind of impressed that Denver got up to 43%. And Denver has a good home crowd. The altitude is a part of the home crowd. Anything that can help their young players who have not been on this stage before, Michael Porter, Fosu, Aaron Gordon has been in one playoff series, I think, and help them get up, my gut says game one, they'll come out ready. They'll be pumped. Hopefully they'll have a successful win. And game two seems always to be the tough one to win on. But in the same sense, winning the first one, Denver's got to be ready because Portland, they're well prepared. Terry Stotts does a great job of offense and defensive knowledge, and he'll study the numbers, and he'll have a good game plan.
Yeah. Speaking of sort of the intensity of it, one of the thoughts I had, I'm just now beginning my preparation for the series and trying to get into it. But one of the things I think can be a key, you mentioned Rivers as a defender. I think Faku's a defender. I think he can be a very good one. And I wonder if his primary role in this series will be to try to wear Damian Lillard down. Full court pressure. I mean, of course, I think Denver can run him off screens and try to really make him work on that end, hit him with screens he has to fight through and this or that. But I think also Faku really annoys people, and he really makes you work a little bit extra hard. And I wonder if that would be a strategy you would try to employ, is just always get into him and make this game 42 minutes of hell.
I think that's going to be an awful high number for him to play. I'm a big believer that you got to cover great players with a committee of defenders.
Yeah.
So I think Faku can be a part of that.
Right.
I think, Austin Rivers can be a part of that. If you want to throw Aaron Gordon back there to do that he might be your fourth quarter guy. But I think all those things kind of come out in the first couple games of the series on, because coaches are trying to guess what they want to do. And good coaches most of the time might be 70% right.
Right.
But there are going to be some mistakes.
Yeah.
That are going to have to be made adjustments to in game one and game two.
You didn't mention Shaq Harrison there. He's been a part of Denver's backcourt. I mean, he's pretty raw offensively, but what do you see out of him? Is he a guy you rely on in a playoff?
Well, I know Malone has a lot of confidence in playing a defensive lineup in that situations. I don't know if he'll go that deep. I don't know. Mm. Again, I think Barton and Dozier and, who they have available. Coaches most of the time get somewhat conservative in their rotations. But maybe Malone will go deeper. I would think that's a wild card, but maybe he will.
Let's talk about Carmelo Anthony. I don't know. Are you aware of the stat that he has not won in Denver since he left?
I think I've heard that, but I was not totally and completely aware of that. It'd be a nice story for him if he would win.
You talked about the coaches up in heaven and the basketball gods. I feel like that's a good one. They played the. Yeah. I think that's hopefully, knock on wood, hopefully that one continues.
Yeah, the karma of him stealing the game on.
Yeah.
From the team that that had a little whatever separation we had.
Yeah.
Melo is matured. I think his 2 years in Portland have been very good for him. I'm happy for him. And he can still put 15 points up in a quarter.
Right.
And that's powerful, especially in a series that if it proceeds and it becomes. And what's funny is I actually think this series could become more of a defensive series than people think, even though you got two of the most offensive efficient teams in the NBA. The game they played before the last game, I thought was 105, 104, or something like that. And it was kind of a sloppy
game. Yeah, it was an ugly one.
Kind of an ugly basketball game. And I have a feeling it might not be a fast-paced game to the point of good efficiency. The three ball is going to play a big role. Jokic is going to be a big, big part of what Denver does. And Damian Lillard, when I did my MVP voting, Damian was in my top five.
Yeah.
I put him with him and Steph Curry and Chris Paul were three guards, and I had Embiid and Jokic.
Was that 1-2, Jokic, Embiid, or?
I'm not an Embiid guy. I don't trust Embiid at all. The exact opposite, my feeling on Embiid is, Jokic is the exact opposite. He can do anything he wants, and I'm happy he'll do it, and he'll do it well. Embiid, even when he does things well, he does things I'm going, why do you do that?
I'm not reading the chat, Kale, but I am certain they're popping off with these comments. It's great.
It is. Chat
is ready to buy Coach a drink. I want to go back to Carmelo here. Do you feel like there's an extra motivation and or an extra pressure on him coming back to Denver and this being a Denver series?
I think there's a – anytime you leave a city, there's a revenge desire to come back and do something on that court that embarrasses the situation. He hasn't had that opportunity. Now he does. But I think Melo, I'm sure, is over what happened in 2011. That's 10 years away. He's moved on, I think, mentally from that. But basketball has a way of stimulating past experiences.
Yeah.
And that might happen in this series.
As I always tell people, like, Carmelo, those years were, what really hooked me into the Nuggets and everything else. And, like, I don't hold a lot of ill will. I wish he would have hung around in Denver longer. But at the same time, if you ask me, you got a chance to keep him out, or he has a chance to get his first win on the court. Like, to me, this raises the stakes tenfold. So it adds a lot of fuel to an already hot burning fire. How do you think the crowd should react and will react to Carmelo? Will there be a little extra booze for him this series?
I don't know if they do it out of respect early, but as this game goes on, be free to be angry and be free to be loud and be
booing
free.
Is respectful. Booing is fair. It's sports.
Just remember, fanatic is where fan came from.
Right, right.
And I think Denver could use some fanatic fans.
Yeah, yeah.
And you never know
I'm with you. I think so too.
you know, the refereeing always comes into the game, and I think the angrier the crowd, the more intensity the referees fuel the game.
I think Portland is going to have about 10% capacity. They might up that, but I don't think they'll get to 43%. And I just wonder if that, you know, Utah's already got almost a full arena, and I really do think that's going to be a real advantage as these playoffs go on, which fan bases get to be there.
Yeah, I've never been in a half field intense building. You know, right. Usually when a building's half full,
yeah,
it's like, oh, I got a bad night tonight. But there is an energy to a playoff game. And if they could get it at a high level where the players could feel it, I really believe it's a positive energy. I really, you know, I think you and I have talked about home court advantage.
Yeah.
Over my years, the home court advantage was worth fighting for.
Right.
Now, in the last 2 years, there has not really been a home court advantage. Or at least the home court advantage has a different definition.
Right.
But Denver, altitude, Portland has not had a lot of success here. I don't remember Damian having a lot of success. McCollum had the big time, big game. I thought McCollum had the big game in game 7 2 years ago. There's a lot of interesting offensive matchups. Two teams that are trying to establish themselves. Portland's been in the playoffs, I think, 8 or 9 consecutive years with some success, but not a lot of success.
Right.
And Denver is the new kid on the block, and if they had Murray right now, I think we'd be talking about a march to the championship. Now we're talking about how long can they survive.
Right. I want to ask you, I have a feeling you're going to dismiss this one, but I want you to try to really think about it. Game ops, meaning all the theatrics that teams do for a playoffs to get the crowd going, to get the atmosphere to feel more intense. Do you feel like those things have an effect? And the reason I ask this is, you know, 2 years ago when Denver first made it, game 1, t-shirts everywhere. They got little glow sticks. You got the thunder sticks. It's loud. It created a nice visual and a nice intensity. There are other games later on in the playoff run where there was none of that. And I thought, okay, this crowd feels more dead. You go to Portland. I think Portland does this as well as anybody, and just everybody gets your shirt. Everybody has it on. The crowd looks menacing. It looks, you know, it gives a certain look. Does that have any effect, in your opinion, on creating atmosphere?
You know, it goes back to the way I feel in a playoff game is I remember earlier in my career in Cleveland, we played the Boston Celtics in the first round. And I went to the gym about 3 hours early just to sit in Boston Garden and watch the game ops evolve and the smelling of the hot dogs and the popcorn.
Right,
and
yeah.
And there's an energy to playoff basketball that, yes, it can be a factor. And anything that can help that energy be sustained, you know, you need it probably more in game 5, 6, and 7.
Oh, yeah.
Then in 1, 2, and 3. But I'm not sure game ops is into that. The game ops is, you know.
Make an impression.
I've always felt is, I just remember the year we lost to Golden State in my last year here in Denver. The game op thing that was unbelievable was they had like a 12-year-old girl sing the national anthem in game 3 and game 6. And she gave me goosebumps.
Yeah.
She gave me goosebumps. And, I mean, she got the crowd into the game from the very beginning, very first play, and it would stay crazy the whole time.
We always laugh. The Nuggets have their go-to anthem guys. I think Harold Rames, I'm going to mess it up, the saxophone guy. To me, that's the premier. We need this win. It's a big game. You get that guy. They've got the acapella guys. They've got their go-to sort of people they go to. I want to go back to the strategy real quick. How are the Blazers going to try to beat the Nuggets? Where's their advantage that they're going to try to exploit?
Shooting. 3-ball. I mean, it comes down to first thing in playoff basketball to me is the best player versus the best player.
Okay.
Who wins that matchup? Damon versus Nikola.
Yeah.
I'm pretty good. I feel pretty good that Nikola's going to win that. But Damon is capable of being goofy, crazy, good. I think we all have seen him. And I just think, you know, I think my extra preparation would be on how do they get the three ball and how do we take the three ball and control the three ball. Making them drive the ball to the basket a little bit more. Your help decisions off of shooters, when to help, when not to help. From a standpoint of being the best defensive team. I mean, statistically, Portland's an awful defensive basketball team. But people should realize they played better. So when Nurkic has come back, they've been a better defensive team in the last 25 games. And I think there's going to be at least one game and maybe two games. They're probably going to be one defensively as much as offensively. But my preparation right would now be on the three ball, the knowledge of the three ball, how we control the three ball. Some of that comes down to transition defense. And the other thing is, can you get some aggressive defensive nature into the game? Do you want to – Coach Malone is one of the few coaches in the league that go after guards every once in a while. Yeah. And so in the pick and roll, are you going to go after? You're not going to give Damon anything. You're going to get, you got to be a passer.
Be playing up, yeah.
And can you do that with JaVale more when Jokic is in the game? Do you use maybe JaVale in that 15, 20-minute role to change up the look? I think there's a lot of things that could be thrown out there early in this series that has to be evaluated if they worked and they didn't work, and hopefully do some things that get you a couple wins early in the series.
So I thought it was interesting earlier on, you almost sound like you were pumping the brakes on Michael Porter a little bit and expectations for him. And I think it's funny because over the last couple of weeks, you've really been talking about how he surprised you. He's impressed you. He's gone maybe even above what you expected of him this early stage. There was a funny back and forth, I thought, with Michael Porter Sr. and you the other day that kind of gave me a chuckle. But and it made me think. He was referencing something you said on the show, so I was wondering maybe he tuned in. But, you know, you've been impressed with him, and yet you're saying, hey, I don't know if the expectations maybe should be dampened a little bit for him. What are your expectations for him in this series?
Help Jokic.
Help
Jokic win a game. The expectations should not be more than he can have maybe two or three really good games, but also realize he's probably going to have one or two that wasn't very good games.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong. But I was with some coaches a couple of days ago, and we said, I don't know how to cover Jokic. I don't know how to take Jokic out of a game. I know how to take Porter out of a game.
How is that?
Don't help off of him. Pick him up early. Be physical with him. Make him use his left hand more than his right. There are things that there could be three or four things that are really – if you take help away from a good defender and say, don't help, Porter's going to have to do some things he probably hasn't done a lot of yet in his career to be a prolific scorer in a playoff situation.
Is it going to be – it sounds like you think it's going to be meaningfully different from what he's seeing in the regular season.
I don't think he's going to get many clean looks, I guess is what I'm saying. And don't get me wrong, he has gotten much better at making tough shots.
Yeah.
But we don't necessarily want – tough shots are important in the fourth quarter, not in the first three quarters. Tough shots are important in the last 5 minutes of the game, not in the first 45 minutes of the game. And, you know, his flow is going to be disrupted by some defensive things that are going to be thrown at him.
Can the Nuggets win the series if he has a below average – series? Him personally.
I think he's got to help at least in one win, maybe two. And if they don't get that, it's going to be hard unless they have a wild card. Can Aaron Gordon get him one? Can Austin Rivers come in with a 5 3-point field goal a game? Mm-hmm. Something crazy.
Yeah.
Monte, I think, played really well in the playoffs last year. Was a little bit of a foundation to him. We don't know where he is at with his injury. But I think it's going to be a team effort. Jokic is going to be a rock. He's going to be great. I think Portland's going to play Jokic straight up. I think you're going to see Nurkic and Kanter have to play him straight up there. I don't think you're going to see many double teams. And there's going to be some coaching strategies in this playoff series.
Yeah. Do you think with Jokic, just as the last one, we're going to wrap up here with Jokic, but does he need to have his best series ever for them to win?
No, I don't think it needs to be that good, but I think he needs to be the best player on the court.
Okay.
The more often he's the best player on the court, those games this year, Denver has won. When he's the best player on the court, I bet you Denver's rate of winning is 80-85%.
What's your prediction on the series?
I would rather make the prediction after the first two games. I would, too.
I'd like to make it after the first six games. That would be
No, the first two games are intriguing to me because I've always felt they're really important. But my gut says if they split the first two games, it'll be a 6-7 game series. If they win the first two games, it'll be a 5-6 game series.
Okay.
Is that a prediction?
Leaning a little bit closer towards Denver then.
I'm totally leaning Denver. Okay. I would not bet Portland in this series.
Okay, that's interesting to hear. All right, Kale, let's wrap it up by getting some questions. We get some good chats in here from the group. Can't wait. Let's fire them away here.
All right.
Do you have a headset?
I do.
Okay, perfect.
They can hear me.
Awesome.
First, we've got a super chat from the Culture Bridge. Oh. I need to move the questions. That's fine. Do you believe all this talk about the Nuggets better without Murray? Also, any chance the Warriors could pull an upset against the Jazz?
The first question got the angry face.
So we're predicting the Warriors are going to beat the Lakers?
No, they would have to lose to the Lakers and then play the Jazz.
Well, you know, let me see if I get all the questions here.
The first question was about Murray. Is the team better without Murray? Some people are trying to say this.
No. They're better defensively without Murray. Yeah. But are they better? No way. Because 90% of NBA playoff games go to the fourth quarter.
Right, yep.
Murray's one of the best fourth quarter players in basketball. They have a couple good ones. Jokic, Murray are better than McCollum and Lilly. But we don't have Murray. So someone else is going to have to play Robin a little bit in the fourth quarters. And don't get me wrong, I think that's a possibility. I mean, I like how Jokic and Porter Jr. were getting a little connection going on in the last 10 games. But in the same sense, I think you got to be careful of over-exaggerating Murray's importance. You can't lose, an all-star basketball player and say we're better.
No.
We're better defensively. We might be better in shot selection, but in the end, you're not better.
Yeah. The second part of that, you kind of laughed at the idea that you think the Lakers are going to crush the Warriors in that play-in game. It's a one-game play-in. Anything can happen.
Come on, man. You're talking about a team that was not very good most of the season, and now Steph Curry's going to become the savior. You know, as I said earlier in the cast, that, you know, I'm not a big fan of the play-in game. And I think 90% of these teams, other than the Lakers, are going to be bumped out in the first round.
Okay.
So the question was actually asking if, assuming the Warriors were the 8th seed, if they could beat the Jazz, who have cooled off a little bit over the last couple weeks.
I think the Warriors' weaknesses will come out in playoff basketball.
Yeah.
They're small. They rely so much on Steph.
They've got one score.
There's so many ways you can defend Steph that I still think they don't have an answer for whatever they come down to. Draymond Green's not a shooter. Doesn't shoot the three ball anymore. You can do a lot of roaming out there defensively on a lot of the guys that are playing on the court.
What else we got?
This one coming in from one of our Serbian listeners. Do you remember the USA Yugoslavia match from the World Cup 2002 in Indianapolis?
Hell yeah.
He's trolling. That was a troll. I don't know if you caught it.
Dude, I was
Okay. Sorry, I didn't know that was a troll.
No, well, he's trolling because Coach George was coaching then.
Oh, okay. My apologies.
Yeah, that's good.
The current Nuggets roster carries a number of offensive and defensive specialists. How do you approach that balance of remaining capable on both ends throughout a game and a series? From Rayvon.
Great question, Ray.
My belief is you got to be balanced. You don't want to go, you don't want to coach the game one way out of balance. You don't want to be all offense and bad defense. You want to be able to find the five guys that can play a good brand of defense but also be explosive offensively. I think Malone does that well. I think it's one of his fortes. He knows that he knows who's playing well. He has the courage to play anybody, anytime, anywhere. And I think he's going to need that in this series. And who might help you win game one might not be the same guy that helps you win game three. It might not be the same guy that helps you win game six.
Gotcha. What else we got, Kale? We'll rapid fire these.
Okay, we've got to both. Should we be concerned that Jokic missed his last 13 threes to end the regular season?
On a cold streak.
No, you got 5 days of practice, 5 days of rest. I thought the last 15, 20 games of the NBA season had a lot of irregularity to them, a lot of inconsistency to them, a lot of uncertainty to them. And I thought Jokic just did. And the way he played was, what do I have to do tonight to win? And if Jokic has to make threes, guess what? I'm betting he's going to make some threes.
I love your confidence in Jokic.
All right, coming in from our guy Lykos, I think. Who's your favorite Yugoslav / Serbian player?
Oh, man, that's a tough question.
Some greats, man.
The one guy I coached was Croatian. I coached Tony Kukoc in Milwaukee, and I loved him. I played against Tony Kukoc in Europe when I coached at Real Madrid and knew he was going to be a special NBA player.
Going into the hall next year, yeah?
Right. He got picked up yesterday. And the guy I probably love the most is the guy I coached for about 2 months in Real Madrid, Drazen Petrovic. And I thought he was one of the first great European players. I think he was the first All-Star European player. And I don't know if you ever saw anybody remembers Drazen, but he was an incredible playmaker. Reminded me, he was compared a lot to Pete Maravich in his day in Europe. But he could score, man. He could put a big number. He could put a big number in an NBA game and also in a European game.
Fierce competitor too.
Yeah, angry guy at times.
angry guy, yeah.
A little dirty too.
A little nerdy.
Dirty.
Oh,
dirty.
Okay, dirty.
He knew how to get under your skin. A little bit like Faku.
A little bit like Faku. I love it. All right, what else we got?
How would Carl have adapted his fast break offense if Jokic was on the roster? I know fast break is oversimplifying a bit, what he
Denver
says.
Yeah, but Denver doesn't get out on the break too often. That's one of the things about it. How would you approach that?
I would give him more responsibilities to be a point guard. I mean, the thing right now that bothers me about Denver is they don't play enough point guard mentality on the court unless Jokic is dominating the ball. And when he dominates the ball, it takes away from some other people having an ability to contribute. But I think Jokic wants to get 10 assists a game more than he wants to get 30 points.
Yeah.
And I think anytime you give him good point guard mentality decision making, he's great. And so, you know, I don't know how you adapt it, but you use him as a trail guy. You use him as a If he rebounds the ball, he's allowed to be the point guard. He's allowed to take it, go with it as fast as possible. Fast break basketball doesn't always mean you're playing fast. What it means is you play faster than the other team likes you to play. Sometimes it's fast, but sometimes it's just good pace and good decision making. And Jokic is a great decision maker.
Yeah. What else? These are great questions, by the way, guys. Good job. Good
hey,
job
Coach,
in the chat.
What do you think is the best player-on-player matchup that Denver needs to exploit in this Portland series?
Denver's advantage, player-on-player. Interesting.
Advantage? Well, Jokic is going to have an advantage because I don't think they're going to double him. I saw the stat where he's an efficient player with one-on-one coverage, and then it goes up about 30% when he gets double teamed. So I think that number is going to keep Portland from doubling him, because I don't want someone else to get hot if I was Coach Stotts right now. But the matchup that I think will be interesting is what I've talked about a lot, is who's going to make the three ball. So what offensive sets can, and what defensive adjustments can we keep the three ball even? You know, can we keep, instead of Portland getting 18 threes and Denver getting 11, can we keep that number to 1, 2, or 3 rather than 4, 5, or 6?
Okay, next one.
Question for Mr. Carl. How does a coaching staff get the team ready for the playoffs in terms of game planning?
This is a long time, by the way, a week to prepare. Yeah. That's longer than usual.
Long.
It's too long.
It's a little too long.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Again, I don't think you want to get, it can be a long journey. 7 games can be a long journey. So I sustain your motivational or inspirational speeches. You save them for game 4, 5, or 6, or maybe 7. You don't waste them early in the series. You just let the energy of the playoffs lift everybody up, and then try to magnify what you do well, try to hide what you do poorly, and then be ready to make some adjustments.
Yeah. This is great. We got time for a couple more.
All right, one super chat coming in. Hey, okay. Coach, what inspires the nickname of Fosu and Dozier?
I like that you have it. Instead of Faku, you always say Fosu.
The chat also loves it, by the way.
I apologize, but I've been laughed at for many years with how I've just destroyed some names. My pronunciation is not very good.
What are some of the funny ones?
Oh, I can't go there. There's some. I mean, there's some crazy stories. I made my whole locker room laugh a couple times with the way I pronounce names. So I apologize, but I don't think it's going to get any better.
Yeah, it's funny. We all say Nikola's name wrong. It's Nikola, and it's not even Jokic. It's Jokic.
Yeah, someone told me that one.
So we actually all say it. The funny thing, and one of the things I actually really appreciate about Jokic is we've asked him about it before, and he goes, I don't care. So I kind of like that. All right, what else?
This is how much coaching goes on with regard to psychological preparation for younger players making their first appearance in the playoffs.
I think coaches are always... I mean, coaches are spending a lot of time on a lot of little details. But as a coach, you don't want to complicate the system unless you have to. You want to make it simple, clear. And I always told players after preparation, is the last thing I want you to do is think when you're playing.
Right.
Yep. I want you to play and then think. But if you think before you play, I think you get messed up. And so that's why I think there are coaches at times have over-prepared and have been prepared for almost everything, but they haven't let the energy of just what this team is. Denver is a good basketball team. They're missing a hell of a player, but they're still a good basketball team. Believe in them. Trust them.
Yeah.
Show the respect that they'll figure it out. And they might need the coach's help a little bit. But in the same sense, this team knows how to win basketball games. And so I never would want to cloud that by giving them too much to think about or too much information. Simplify if you can. And then add the little things as you go on to make it hopefully an easy, quick series.
We got one last one, Kale?
One last one that's kind of fun to end on.
Okay.
Coach Carl, which player from your Nuggets days would you combine with a current player to create one perfect guy? he says, to me, it would be Jokic and Nene.
Well, I don't know about that.
Mm.
I imagine you have to start with Jokic if you're creating the perfect player. He's closest.
I mean, that's such a crazy. The one that comes to mind is if you could make Porter Jr. and Andre Iguodala.
Oh, man.
I mean, a defender and an offensive, prolific offensive scorer. We don't make those guys very much in the NBA.
Yeah.
Scoring is usually enough. But if you can make a guy like Giannis is a little bit of a great defender and a, not a damn good offensive player. But I think it'd be probably, I don't know, you don't need anybody to play with Jokic. He's got everything. I mean, what else do you want to add to his game? Okay, you want to make him strong and athletic and powerful. I think it would take away from a simple game.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, but
give Jokic Ty Lawson speed. That'd be pretty good.
Ty Lawson always. I think right now the NBA game is the little point guards can have some havoc on the game. And I loved my couple years with Ty Lawson. I thought he played great for us.
Yeah. Well, everybody, thank you for the comments in the chat. This was great. You know, we're now up. We're going to be doing this again, I think, after game two. So we're going to get a couple games under our belt, analyze how the series is going, and then go from there. Maybe game two, game three. We'll kind of have to play it by ear and see how it's going. But this was a great conversation, Coach. I really appreciate it. Any final thoughts before we get into the series?
Oh, I'm glad we're into the regular season of basketball.
Yeah.
Exhibition season's over. Let's go see real basketball. The best basketball in the world right now is beginning tonight. So let's have fun with it.
Can't wait for it. Everybody else, thanks. Hit the like button on the way out. Hit the subscribe. Don't forget, we are also a podcast, the Keeping It 1000 podcast. So if you ever missed this show, you don't want to miss an episode of the podcast, so subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get it. Everybody else, we'll see you tomorrow.